Café Rollist is your caffeinated tabletop RPG break. It started as our exclusive Patreon show, but following a survey with our supporters, I am happy now to share its most recent episode here with you. If you enjoy this show, please consider checking out our archive of 100 or so additional episodes, which are still exclusive on Patreon.
Hello, is this working? Okay, seems my little thing seems to say that you should hear me. Thanks for joining for the big return of the Café Rollist after, I believe, 3 years of absence. And yeah, as I was explaining to my guest, several nice people with cool projects came to me to be featured on interviews. So I thought, yeah, three, I need to come back for that. Without further ado, please meet Tim. Tim, could you introduce yourself?
Absolutely. My name is Tim Roberts. I am the founder of Critical Kit Limited in the UK, and I create tabletop role-playing games.
So how long have you been doing that?
Wow. So I've really only been creating role-playing games for about 3 years. I wrote my first game about 3 years ago, but I have been playing role-playing games since the 80s. So I've been in on the scene for a long time, but I've only really done this professionally for about 3 years.
And you're even an awarded designer, I believe.
I am, yeah. My first, quite surprisingly, my first game won UKG's role-playing game of the year, which was I think it was the first solo game to win it as well. So
it was up against
some big games, and it was I think it was a bit unexpected for us, which was it was a nice surprise.
Congratulations. This show actually started in the dark times of the pandemic, so I used to have the ice-breaking question of asking, what does your routine look like, your day-to-day life? It used to be more like, oh, what does your typical day look for you in the lockdown situation? But now that we are out of that, what's the new, quite old new normal for you?
At this moment in time, it's very unique for me, because I guess the first thing I do on a morning is I check the Kickstarter. But that's definitely the backer kit. I keep calling it Kickstarter because we've done so many Kickstarters. So that's the first thing I kind of do, just to see where we are and maybe answer any comments people have had. But my day generally, so we also sell a lot of accessories. That's where our business really started about 5 years ago, selling accessories like dice mainly. So one of the things we'll kind of do on a morning, my wife and I, Sarah, who's a partner in the business, we'll just discuss some business things, and then generally she will take over from there with the general running of the business and just allow me to write. So I will try and write as much as I can. I do get distracted quite easily, but I do try to also get through as much writing as I can in a day. So it's a mixture of running the business and probably planning events, conventions, and writing.
And this morning you checked, and you're getting close to those 50k stretch goals, I think, on your project, which I don't think we even have named yet.
So for Punk is Dead, we are now at about, I think we just tipped 46k in the last hour or so. It's been absolutely, it's been fabulous. I think I'm fortunate to have built up a community with Be Like a Crow, my first game. We still seem to be getting a lot of new people. I think we're now bringing on board some people who are either Merkborg fans or quite a few people that have never played a role-playing game, but they're just interested in the musical aspects of it. So it seems to have captured, the imagination of a few people. And that's a good thing. It's a really good thing.
It's a bit, I guess, coming back to the origins almost. You know, Merkberg was punk, and punk, yeah, to some extent came from the UK. Now it's coming back to the UK, yeah, to punk itself.
Yeah, it is a very UK-centric game, is Punk is Dead. It's, punk did originate in the UK. I was just a little bit too young, just a little bit too young to be involved in the original punk scene. But definitely my sort of formative music years, you know, a lot of punk bands were involved. So we did listen to some older music. And I think bands like The Clash were definitely a big influence on me, you know, from sort of, I'd say, politically and also from musical taste and creativity as well. And yeah, I did create the game as being UK centric. I wanted it to be a bit different to Merkborg, insofar as Merkborg is in a fantasy world. I wanted to bring this into a fantastical version of the UK. And I guess there's nothing to stop people from playing it in their own countries as well, which, who knows, that might be a future endeavor.
Well, I'm going to put some images of the game. So what's the elevator pitch actually for Punkin's Dead beyond being Merkborg compatible?
So the rather whimsical elevator pitch is it's like Scooby-Doo with mosh pits and music. But, you know, I suppose it's a little bit more hardcore than Scooby-Doo. The general concept behind the game is a post-apocalyptic United Kingdom. Everything that's gone wrong, could go wrong, has gone wrong. And the situation is that, well, the world's quite dire, pretty much like Merkborg. It is on the verge of ending. And you are basically members of a punk band who are trying to go around the country in a clapped out old van, write songs, play music to people, spread a message of hope. But also you do get to solve mysteries and kill bad guys. So there is the sort of the quest type element that you'd expect in all role playing games, But it is also a songwriting role playing game, which.
That's intriguing.
I think it's quite unique.
That's intriguing. I'm very intrigued by that, by songwriting. What does actually that mean in terms of play? You're muted?
Apologies, yes, I am. I don't know why I'm muted then. Can you hear me, yeah?
Yep.
Okay, yeah, so as you play the game... The general idea is, so with a lot of the games that I write, I try to bring another aspect of creativity into them. So like Be Like a Crow is creative writing with rules. Another one of my games, D666, is dungeon building with rules. So this game is not different in that aspect. It functions like a regular role-playing game, but the big difference is that if you're going to play it rules as written, you're supposed to put a big sheet of paper in the middle of the table, and one that's accessible for everybody to scribble on and write on and put graffiti on and make notes on. But ultimately, as you go through the game, players can suggest lines for a song. So each session, you should really be also thinking about writing a song. So you can do this yourself. You can do this just using your own creativity. But there are also rollable tables in there as well to give you inspiration for writing a song, you know, to give you prompts for lines, etc. And the process of writing a song involves you suggesting a line or lines, and it also involves the band voting on if that line goes in. And if the line goes in, you get some creativity points. And at the end of a session, if you've actually got a good song written, then the band manager, who is basically the GM, can award you group creativity points as well. And these points can be used to modify roles. So you're getting rewarded for being creative.
So... Did the idea for the game came first, and then you looked around, or you were considering what system would be fitting for that, and you went to Merkborg, or were you playing with Merkborg and were like, well, hang on, what if I was doing this or this type of setting instead?
Yeah, that's a really good question, and I have thought about that, because often I sort of dive into games and I'm really far into them before I've actually thought back about what the origins or the inception of those games were.
People tend to think that it's really straightforward, A, then B and C, where actually it's more things happening in parallel, and then it reaches a critical mass.
Well, I think any creative endeavor, I think, you know, whether you're a painter, an artist, whether you write songs, or, you know, a writer, like a fiction, I think any creative endeavor generally comes from I don't know, a lot of ideas coming together, you know, a confluence of ideas, and then basically iterating over those ideas. And sometimes it's just something in a moment. I I can't remember the exact moment that I decided to put Merc Borg with Punk Is Dead, but Punk Is Dead came first.
Okay.
I'd been aware, so I'd been, I wanted to make a game about songwriting. I wanted to make a creative game, and it, being that I'd done a lot of solo games, I think originally I'd planned it as a solo game, and then I kind of lent into the, I kind of enjoyed death metal aspects of Merc Borg. I, you know, that game's been out three or four years now, probably a lot more, longer actually, but I've been aware of it for that time. And I just had that kind of eureka moment of thinking, well, come on, if this is a death metal game, then why can't we have a punk game? And I just started thinking about that more and more until eventually I came up, you know, on the idea of how that would fit in with being a punk and being in a band, and what thematically what I could bring from being in a band to the Merc Borg setting.
You mentioned Scooby-Doo. Scooby-Doo is a lot of investigation going on. Of course, you can do an OSR approach, which is the players, you know, making most of the, you know, the legwork to come up with solving what's going on. Is the game, in terms of system, still very close to Merc Borg, and you, well, not only, but you do a lot of, well, murder hoboing to some extent, except evil corporate mm-hmm. vampire, or do you have components of it which also, not support, because you don't need rules, I think, to support an experience necessarily, but that rules that shape other aspects like investigation?
Yeah, so, yeah, absolutely. So, I mean, it's definitely a bit of a divergence from the OSR, you know, the hardcore OSR that Merc Borg is. It's, I would say that what this game is it's Merc Borg in spirit. Obviously, the rules are heavily, you know, the foundation of the rules are Merc Borg, because one of the things I wanted you to be able to do was either bring anything from Merc Borg into my game, creatures, concepts, or take my concepts, like be a punk band in the Merc Borg world. This is, so that was something that was important to me. But I do want to try and push away from the murder hobo aspect of it, you know, and get more into the change in society. So it is a game still filled with a lot of doom. It's in the spirit of Merc Borg, not only in the concepts behind the game, like, you know, everything is going to end one day, although I have got something else to say about that, but also in the stylization of the book. But again, I did want to dive. I don't think Merc Borg is a very accessible book. I do want to make it more accessible, a bit more straightforward to read. So even though it will have a lot of the aesthetic, the design, the bright colors, it will also feel like its own game. It won't just feel like, you know, a themed version of Merc Borg. It will actually feel like something that is unique, and it is a standalone game, but it will have the spirit of Merc Borg in it.
I like that, you know, creativity. You know, Merc Borg draws inspiration from OSR, but catch the ball and carry it on the other side of a mm-hmm. football field, I guess. I'm not good at sport. and you take it and turn it into yet something else. The setting itself, you mentioned a dysfunctional United Kingdom, which is present day, United Kingdom, despite all the love I have.
That comment has been leveled at me quite a lot, like, so it's just real life then, but it's got a bit more to it.
Yeah, what's a bit more? I'm very interested in the Ununited Kingdom. I believe that you got five districts. What's going on there?
So this I had to think long and hard about this, because I didn't want to upset people. It's really easy to upset people in the UK, as you probably know, especially when it comes to territory. So what I tried to do is there's a reason why I split into five realms, because I wanted to create, as it's a game primarily about music that does involve a lot of, you know, aspects of other role-playing games, such as the three pillars. What I also wanted to do was give players and the bandmasters and groups the ability to play in different kinds of settings. So the way I decided to do that was to create the five realms of the United Kingdom. So, you know, so we've got the we've got the sort of southeast, which would be London, which is, you know, it can be a very contemporary style setting. Just slightly above that, we've got the wall, which is Birmingham, and that's a very industrial part of the UK, which is kind of steampunk but industrial. You can play a more industrial type game in there. Above that, you've got where I'm originally from, which is the Grim, which actually comes from Sting, who are another amazing, which is it's Grim up north. And that's kind of more of a Mad Max style setting with very disparate communities. Scotland, I've turned into the Fern Jungle, which is going to be basically what it is. If you wanted it in D&D terms, probably Chull, but with a lot more Scottish mythology. That, you know, no D&D myth, no D&D things in it, just Scottish mythology. I'm trying to stay loyal to the regions and give them, you know, give people something that they can identify. And then where I live now currently, just Bristol, that's and Wales, is the what they call the Whimsy, which is a very dark equivalent of the Feywild, probably a little bit darker. I know the Feywild can get quite dark, but it's quite a, you know, there's a lot of nefarious spirits. And then over the sea, what would be Northern Ireland and Southern Ireland is kind of my gift to GMs, which is basically Stats Unknown. So that's an area that you can fill in the blanks on, you know. So I guess what I was trying to do with the realms is identify parts of the UK broadly with broad strokes, but also give GMs something where their players could say, well, why don't we go and play in this area next time, because we could run this type of game or this genre.
So do you have plans for splat books for each of the different regions as a future project?
That's a good question. I only really write what I guess I want to write, which isn't always, you know, it's not always the best thing to do when you're trying to run a business out of it, but I also think sometimes the passion shows through. I will write expansions for this game, but I will put a pretty good explanation of each realm will be in the book anyway. So it'll be kind of like Merkborg in the sense of it will give you some openness, but I'm also going to try and go into a little bit more depth about each region, you know, what you would find there, what the sort of politics of that area are, and also how it relates to the other realms. But I'm going to try and do a lot of that within the book.
So Merkborg and Cyborg have quite a thriving community of people contributing with their own content. Is that something you have given a thought of? I mean, it's not like something I think you can... I mean, if creators had the power of just, you know, manufacturing that, that would be quite something. But is it something you consider that... how you would support third parties, fans, come up with their own zines related to Punk is Dead?
Yeah, it will be released using the same license that Merkborg uses. So any developer can create their own content for it, make money off it if they wish. And it'll just have to, you know, it'll only really have to state that it's not one of our official products, but they can, you know, they can go ahead and pretty much use it in the same way as they would create content for Merkborg.
And going back to the campaign itself, your next goal is it's at 50k. What do you have in store for when you reach that stretch goal?
Oh, that stretch goal, that's going to be a lot. We're taking the map, which was actually created by a brilliant artist called Jog Brogsin. I think he's an artist hailing out of Ireland, and we're going to create it into like a big sort of fold out map that you can put on the table, but we're also going to embellish it with sort of like a key of venues. Like, so they're going to be, we're going to go to the community and ask them for kind of venues that they remember going to see bands in. You know, we want real sticky floor venues. We don't kind of want your O2s. And you know, I'm going to put some of my, because I used to go to gigs when I was young, so, and we're going to make it, that's kind of where your adventures start out. They are kind of like the taverns where you learn about, you know, you're going to play a gig, but you also learn about localized issues and problems there. So it might be that you get your, you know, your issue from you might actually get to a gig and find out about something, or you might specifically go play there because you have found out about something. So we're going to try and itemize, put a bit more granularity on the map rather than it just being in the book at the moment. It just shows you the five realms, sorry.
That's actually a nice, you know, setup when you start an adventure, that okay, you're at this venue and something goes wrong, the gig is cancelled, or you just finished your performance and someone comes up to you and asks you something, or you get thrown a can of beer at the face and someone is nursing you and
Yeah, you might not actually get out of the gig before you start a fight. You know, that's the way the game could go.
Do you have rules supporting the gig performance itself? I mean, is it part of the character sheet, or is it related to the songs you make?
Yeah, there are. So there are rollable tables for the there's a table for the gig, but you can make a group roll on your stage presence. So. That depends on how the bandmaster wants to handle it, how important he sees that aspect of the game, or they see that aspect of the game.
So after the map, we're moving into a completely other musical genre, hip hop. So you grew up listening to hip hop, or that's when you hire someone to join the team and contribute?
So, there's two things about that. Yeah, I did grow up listening to hip hop. I was I would say early 90s, I was a huge hip hop fan. I still listen to hip hop now, and I listen to some quite obscure hip hop bands. I mean, one of my favorite hip hop bands is the Goats, who hail from Philadelphia. They are very political, and definitely not gangster rap. So I do tend to veer more towards the political side of rap. I really enjoy it. You know, I enjoy a lot of lyrics, which probably speaks to my sensibilities as a storyteller and a writer. But rap, ultimately, I think, like punk, it's a form of music created from what you've got. You know, it's an accessible form of music. You know, the young people that were creating rap music are not much different from the people that were creating punk music, insofar as they used what they had available to them. They didn't have any kind of formal training in what they did. They just got out there and did it. And I'll probably reach out to some people who can help me, either with artwork or maybe even some of the writing from that community that might be a little bit more qualified than I am to write them kind of things, or at least get some kind of sensitivity check in and make sure that, you know, I've written everything with some authenticity.
You mentioned the politics of hip hop, and there's politics of punk also. Do you think, I mean, you mentioned before we started that you were happy with the No Fascist Welcome logo on my cover. Do you dwell into political questions in the game itself, teamed?
I do, and it's a strange, because I've never really expressed my political opinions as far as my business goes on social media. So I do realize, you know, this might be, for some people, it might be seen as political because it is punk. And I know punk had very left wing and some right wing sides. I would definitely state now that this is this leans towards the left wing of punk. You know, there's no place for any right wing punk in this game. But you know, I've had a few comments on Facebook and things about the game. I think my favorite comment, if I can use not too bad language, but my favorite comment was somebody had put, it's left wing bullshit. So I did an advert for the game. Well, an advert. I did like a TikTok post and an Instagram post for the game, which actually took all the reviews of people who haven't read the book. And we tried to own them. So, you know, I understand what some people in these times on social media might see it as being a game that's trying to be political, but it's a game that's trying to get people to be creative and also just give them a sense of agency, maybe in a world that does feel a bit hopeless. You know, it's a form of escapism.
Yeah, the notion of punk as, you know, fighting back to against a situation, and also the idea of, as you mentioned, of you got the skills and the resources you have, but you go out there and you're creative with that, and no matter you know what people's gonna think and so on. It's when you look at music yeah. nowadays, including things with the, I mean, not to be like, oh, that's not real punk and so on, but things tend to have a lot of skills and resources, and it doesn't feel mm-hmm. sometimes that there's this space left. I mean, especially with the accessibility of music, you can listen to any artist anywhere. So mm-hmm. it's a bit difficult if you're a local. I guess back in the days, although it might have been much before I was old enough to be into music, but you could have a local scene and be, you know, decent for the local scene. While now it feels like you're always confronted with the international scene, and also not only international, but the scene from, you know, back in time. And people are not encouraged enough of, yeah, go ahead, do your thing. It is what it is, and that's great. Which is something still exists in the indie TTRPG scene, which is nice, I find.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. And I think, I feel like this game has been one that it's one that I've really enjoyed writing, because it does. It's again coming back to a Facebook post that someone put, and I do read them, but I've got a very healthy attitude towards them. Somebody had put that 100% this game was not written by a punk, and it depends how you define punk, because I didn't know punk was that elite really. But you know, effectively, I think of the game, I write the game, I pick up a pen and paper at the beginning. Then I start laying it out. I do everything myself. I do, apart from the artwork, I pretty much do the whole game from start to finish, even, you know, making sure it's off to the printers, even fulfilling the games. We do all that ourselves. And that's the indie TTRPG space. It's got a lot in common with punk. You know, I might not have a Mohican and a leather jacket on and, you know, a stud through my nose, but we're still doing something with what we've got, with what, you know, we're making things for other people. And we're also, I think another part of punk is being inspiring to people. And that's what all I want my games to do, is to inspire people to think, well, you know, I could do this, or I could make a game like this, or I could write something like this. And so if anything's in the spirit of punk, I think that is, yeah.
Great. You mentioned for the hip hop, you might get a bit of support for the writing. But I see the very final stretch goal, you're back in your comfort zone. It's a solo gaming version of the game.
Yes, it is. Yeah, yeah, yeah. It's, it is. Yeah, I'm back in where it all began. Yeah, the solo game, which will be, the only thing I haven't decided on what to do with that yet is whether to use cards or whether to use, for prompts, a tarot deck or a standard deck of playing cards, but I've got a pretty good idea of how the whole thing's going to work.
So I like the concept, because it's not just you play Punk is Dead solo. It's folk hero, and yeah, you've got this idea of the solo artist touring on their own. I don't remember what's this movie with what's his name? I think it's a Coen Brother movie. Should have checked before, but yeah, you know the artist traveling around, hitchhiking rides, and so on. So
yeah,
that's cool, and that's all other avenues of inspirations for you.
Absolutely, yeah. And also, I guess what I enjoy about there's a couple of things I enjoy about solo is one, you know, RPGs are great, and they're a great way of bringing people together, but you know, we don't always want to be with people as well. And it's nice just sometimes to get away and play on your own. Or, you know, there's times when your session collapses. And, you know, for one reason or another, someone can't make it. So it means that you don't have to, you know, not play an RPG on that particular night. But something I've definitely been exploring a lot lately as well, and it is I'm going to try and make it come into play in this game and come into play in a future version, a multiplayer version of Be Like a Crow that I'm making, is the ability to, if you can't make a session, you can actually go off and play, do something on your own, like a side quest, maybe to retrieve an object for the group, etc. And it's something I've really been toying with the idea of making for a long, long time, that we can bring solo and multiplayer together.
So would that be what you describe? Would that be solo? Would that be one-to-one? I'm actually about to start my first campaign as the single player with a game master.
No, it would be... So for instance, just to give you the example of what I'm going to do with Corvus, which is going to be later this year, a backer kit, it's based on Be Like a Crow. So it uses the same character sheet. It uses slightly different mechanics, but the difficult part was balancing the mechanics between cards and dice. But it means that you can play the game with dice in a multiplayer group. But if you were to say... right, next Wednesday I can't make the session, and the group says, well, that's fine, but actually we're going to go off and do this, but why don't you, maybe on Thursday night when you're free, you go off and see if you can, you know, retrieve this object that we need, or do this little thing, or go meet this person or whatever. And, you know, that's something you might be able to do with the GM as well. You know, you might, it depends on the complexity of what you've got to do, but ultimately you can come back to the group and say, you know, I died, I've had to roll another character, or yes, I got the object, or no, I didn't get the object, but
avenge,
I got a lead on
me.
The object. So, I mean, you know, I love exploring these ideas. I love seeing where we can take role-playing games.
Yeah, I like campaign dynamics when... I mean, sure, it's great when everybody's available all the time, but by far, I prefer to play with, you know, not all the players... even a single one, rather than not play at all. So, I think it's like a show or a book. It changes the spotlight slightly between characters and helps flesh out the overarching story.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Absolutely. I mean, it's my dream for the Corvus game, and maybe even this game with the solo mode, is that you could start playing this solo and then bring the same character into a multiplayer game if you wanted, or vice versa. If a game collapsed, as you know they do occasionally, you could just continue playing solo.
So when I'm still have to actually make live my first crowdfunding campaign, but I know sometimes you know, we have stretch goals, but even the final stretch goal is the real stretch goal. So we already worked towards it. Have you already worked towards the solo mode, or is it something like, oh, that would be nice if we reach that, and you keep it on the side, and you will touch it properly once the stretch goal is attained?
Yeah, I think it's somewhere between those two points. So obviously it's not laid out. There's not, you know, I haven't put until the part of reaching that stretch goal is to allow me to have the time to do it so I can eat. But the by the same right, I have an idea of how having written three solo RPGs, I have an idea of how the mechanics are going to work and how I want to play that through. So the work would really be in just writing the prompts and creating the layouts, which to be honest with you, I'm having a lot of fun with. So I don't think it'd take any time to do the actual creating of the layouts. The prompts are always the more difficult thing to do, because you have to make sure that they make sense when they're combined together. Because if you've seen Be Like a Crow, that uses dynamic prompts. So it's kind of, a lot of my time goes into play testing it. What I would say about solo RPGs though, is you can do at the outset, you're not reliant on other people until you want to do the final polishing, because you can do a lot of the play testing yourself. You know, it's a solo RPG. So you can make sure before it even goes out to anybody that there's no glaring, you know, loopholes or imbalances or things that, you know, just don't work.
That's interesting, actually, because, yeah, indeed, you can play test on your own. But what I found it's interesting also how you don't realize that sometimes you project things you already know in the text, which is not quite there. So I assume you still have a step when you hand the solo game for playtest without your involvement.
Yeah.
You're like, oh, hands off, I'm not around, I'm not telling you anything, just have a read.
Exactly, yeah. So, I mean, there's several steps to that. So, I mean, another place where we do pick things up before it even goes to other playtesters is our proofreaders, because, you know, it goes to proofreaders before it goes to playtesters to make sure it makes sense. And we use proofreaders that are involved in the gaming industry. So I'd recommend anybody, not just to hire. I've hired a regular proofreader before, as in just a proofreader that does proofreads anything. And then I've also hired a proofreader that is involved in the gaming industry. And obviously the latter one makes more sense because they can pick up on, well, things like you've named a rule this here, you know, and you haven't named it that there, you've changed the name, and that can happen. You know, you might think of a better name for a certain skill or something. So they can also pick up, they often do pick up things that don't seem to make sense in the rules. So I'd always say to anybody, you know, that's writing a game, if you can get a proofreader before you even send it out to your playtesters, you will get yourself 90% of the way there.
Yeah, my own current project, Rosewood Abbey, is currently with a rules editor. And I must say, not only it brings so much in terms of, you know, bringing the text up a notch for someone who, I guess I write games, but I don't consider myself really a writer. Like, I could never do lore or things like that. But not only it brings up the text and the, you know, the how robust the rules are and how understandable and accessible they are, but even when I'm writing, it makes it easier to write because I worry less about getting things perfect. I need to get my point across, and then I know Chris S. Sims, so I hire him for the second time as rules editor. But I feel confident that I can go there and Chris will sort it out to some extent.
Yeah.
Afterwards, it's quite liberating to know that you got someone in your having your back next.
Yeah, I agree with that, and you know I don't think I'm even ashamed to admit anymore that when I send something off to the proofreader, it can come back with a few hundred changes, which sounds, that might sound like a lot to some people, but it's generally maybe a bit of grammar or maybe just rewriting things or full stops or commas or all kind of things. Because what I do is I just write and I think I'm good at doing what I'm good at doing to get it so far. And then, you know, someone else can, that is their job. Their job is to, because I think when you're inside the game as well, you don't always notice everything that's wrong with it, or especially not as far as grammar and things go, because it's something you're projecting straight out of your thoughts onto a sheet of paper or the screen. And, you're reading it in a way that you understand. And again, that also comes in with, you touched on writing lore there. That's one of the most, I guess writing lore and mechanics, one of the most difficult things is knowing how much you need to put outside of your brain, because it's like the tip of an iceberg. There's a lot of things you have, a knowledge you have about your own game that the reader does not need to know. But it's also making sure you don't leave too much out as well. So it is a really fine balance. And I think definitely a proofreader can, you know, pick up on things like that. And you know, it's possible to miss whole paragraphs that might be important out of a game because you feel like something self-explanatory, and maybe it's not.
You're entirely right with the fine balance, because I also find there's an aspect of, I mean, I see that in my work, especially when we do, you know, those boring PowerPoints. And a big part of the work is controlling the amount of information you bring to the table. But it's not just, oh, I should also explain this and that. I think at some point, there's the question of is it too much information, actually? Do I need to pare it down so the essential comes across? And actually, it reminds me, I was watching the video you made for the launch of the campaign, and you mentioned that Punk is Dead, you consider it to be more accessible than Merc Borg and Cyborg, because you include more onboarding information regarding things. And that's something I actually found fascinating with a more Cyborg than Merkborg myself, but how it sort of set aside a, personally I would say, a slight form of a hubris to think that, you can learn a role-playing game on your own with a book. No, Cyborg and Merkborg considered, no, you already know what's a role-playing game, you're familiar with it. If you don't, you'll find people to explain to it, you'll find resources online. This is a system, this is the vibe. Go and get things sorted on your own. But at least you know the information is important, and if you're a bad reader, like I am, actually too much mm-hmm. text is a barrier rather than a support. That was the approach, which I'm not saying at all is the right approach, but it was fascinating. How did you balance that yourself? It seems like you went back from a between point with traditional game in terms of the amount of information. What did you add to Merbok beyond the, you know, what makes the spirit of Punk is Dead?
For a start, the contents are at the front. So that's one big issue.
It's not the worst game for tables of content, Cyborg. I've seen much worse.
No, if you're used to reading books from the back, then maybe, you know, Merbok is really well presented. It's a good point, because there are some decisions to be made when you write an RPG. Like when you know, for instance, when you're doing character creation and you're mentioning skills, is that a good point to mention skill checks and how they work, or do you do that later on for the GM? There are a lot of considerations to make. I feel like, though, it's not for me. I get what Merbok's doing stylistically, and I feel like it's not for me, because one of the things I want to do, and I did this with Be Like a Crow, and it's still a big selling point for Be Like a Crow, is that I wanted to create something that introduced people to role-playing games. So I get a lot of people that buy it that say, I've never played a role-playing game. I don't really want to get to a table with a group or buy a massive, you know, 300-400-page manual. You've got an 80-page book here, about 15 pages, which are rules. I think it's really important just to at least have a page that explains what a role-playing game is, and that it's a conversation. And I think it is fine to say, you know, you go off and watch videos. There are videos online, and to give some examples. But then again, I think it's also right to say that this isn't the only way to play a role-playing game, but to also, I think you have to put some expectations in. And one of the first things I always in any role-playing game book I write is, you know, if you're familiar with role-playing games, you can skip this section, but I suggest you read it because you might learn something new.
Great. Is there anything we missed in terms of Punk is Dead that you'd like to cover?
Not really. No, the only thing I would say about it is I've had so much fun writing it, and I really feel like that's going to shine, you know, I feel like it's going to shine through in the game. So I guess one thing I would definitely like to say about it, because I don't know whether it holds it back, is you do not need any musical talent to play this game. It's not the point. It is a songwriting game. You can bring instruments to the table if you want. I have got a kind of unofficial rule in the book that says if you do play an instrument, you're not allowed to play that instrument in the game. So if you actually can play an instrument, you have to play a different instrument. You know, it's ultimately, it's a game, and going back to what we've just said, there are different ways to play a role-playing game, and you can take the songwriting aspect of it to as deep a level as you want, but what you need to do is just come to it with the punk spirit and, you know, have that feeling that you can change the world. So it's not as, I would say, it's not as desolate as Merbok. It does utilize the kind of like the doom clock aspect of it, mm-hmm. the Psalms. However, I think what's very different, and I did say I was going to mention this earlier on, what's very different about my game is that there is going to be the opportunity as a band you level up. You don't get better as individuals per se, other than if you find things, but as a band you level up from playing grubby clubs to, you know, bigger venue stadiums, getting your word out there. And this is a way that you can pull the doom clock back by creating hope.
You mentioned I haven't asked. It's very OSR-ish or you know, typical dungeon crawling. But is your instrument your class, or does that work?
No, your role. So you don't have a class. Well, what would be analogous to a class is your role in the band.
Mm-hmm.
So you have a role. So you would be like a guitarist, or you would be a drummer, and you can tweak them a little bit, but you know, just for obvious reasons, a drummer would be very good at tough and strength, so they're very kind of, you know, full on, just bashing things. So they're kind of like tempo keeping barbarians, but I think that's reducing them a little bit too much. But it gives you a feel for, you know, what a role does actually give you.
There is, you know, is there a chance that as the drummer you will self combust in place, or you're the first to disappear, like in Spinal Tap?
quite possibly, yeah, quite possibly. I don't know. I mean, there's been a lot of famous drummers out there, and a lot of strange things have happened to them. So there's the chance that
sadly,
if you're a drummer, anything could happen, and you're likely to be the thing that holds the band together, but also the wildest as well. So there's quite a paradox there.
Great. All right. Well, I will include a link to the campaign. I think Punk Is Dead is also very good, easy to Google. You can add RPG behind it, so people know where to find it. When is the campaign ending? For how long those people have to support it?
I think it ends at, let me get this right. It ends on the 29th of February, because I just ran it from the 1st to the 29th. So that would end at 3 p.m. UK time, which is about probably 7 a.m. PST, which is not a very good time. So it means you're going to have to get up early to back it on the last day if you're in the States. But yeah, I think, I'm not sure. I've seen backer kit seems to have this thing where if the train keeps going, I'm not sure how I feel about it. But if the backer train keeps going, they keep the campaign running.
Okay.
Until 10 minutes. I was watching one the other day that was down to 9 minutes, and I was just intrigued because it was, I think it was the first one I'd seen ending. And I thought, oh, I'll just watch it and see it end. And I kind of went off and did something, made a cup of tea or something, and came back and it was still on 9 minutes. And then I noticed that when it got down to 5 minutes, and someone backed it, the backer train went back up to 9 minutes. So I don't know whether I'm going to have to reach out to backer kit, because I don't know whether that's something automatic or something that needs checking. And I'm not sure how I feel about it. The other side of that is that I don't really want it to go on too long, because the day after we're flying out to Louisville to attend Gamma. So I kind of want to know where we are before we go there.
It's interesting because backers kids used for late pledges on other crowdfunding platforms. So you would imagine to some extent, yeah, it keeps going. So let's say I'm this person who at Pacific time 6:30, I do my late pledge. You ship worldwide, right? Despite the, you know, ongoing challenges of the still United Kingdom.
Yep.
Okay, worldwide, Europe, everywhere. Great.
We also, it's probably important to note that we also pay landed costs for the EU, which basically means that we pay all the VAT. So, you'll get the delivery to your door.
Great. Okay, good to know.
Yeah, we've done that ever since that little thing called Brexit.
I will find a way around
that. No comment. Play the game, and you'll get to, if Brexit wasn't your thing, you'll probably get to
just pledge. Don't worry about it. It will be at your door in time, no problem. Thank you so much, Tim. Where can people find you? Where you wish to be found?
They can find me on most social media at CritKit UK. You can also go to criticalkit.co.uk, and that's it, really. I mean, you can either search for my name or you can search for Critical Kit. We'll come up somewhere.
Brilliant, great. I think we had some hiccups with the stream. We got interrupted at some time, but the recording here, crossing fingers, seems to have worked fine. So I will put the video on YouTube for people who watch bits of it on Twitch or elsewhere, or see this right now, or people won't see the video and listen to the audio. So yeah, links in the description for that. Thanks again, Tim, and everyone rush to support Punk Is Dead.
Thank you.
Take care, everyone. Bye.
Bye.
Our logo is designed by Roland Kunz. Our theme song is Playtime by Jazar, which you can download on the Free Music Archive. A video version of this episode is available on YouTube. Please consider subscribing to our channel there. Leave us a review on your favorite podcasting platform. If you would like more Café Rollist, you can also get access to our archive of 100 or so additional episodes via Patreon. If you want to be informed of everything released by the Rollist, we have a monthly newsletter for you to join. And if you want to contribute via the chat room to one of our recordings, subscribe to our Twitch channel and social media accounts to be informed of when streams are happening. Finally, links to everything I just mentioned can be found in the description of this episode. Thanks for listening to us, and remember, you are the realist.